irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another great show of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Cindy DeFerdinand.
Hi, everybody.
Well, it was another great week in
the field
life
of coaching.
Lots of stuff going on. Just a lot of challenging. I got some challenging cases on my end, and at some point we ought to just do a show just us talking about kind of doing our own case conference.
Yes, it's nice, you know, picking up new clients and. It's just such a joy to coach and get to know new people, and also the clients I've been working with for a long time, you form a real bond. It's a special relationship. So yeah, it's just fun. It's exciting. Today we have a wonderful guest, Mary Street, and she is from the San Diego market, and she is an intuitive coach, which is going to be really fun to talk to her. Now, I feel like, you know, as I teach coaching, I often ask the class, how many intuitives do we have in the room? And I taught a class this weekend in Orlando, and I'd say out of the entire class, at least 3/4 raised their hands. So there's always this controversy around, do you give your intuitive thought? Do you ask permission to give your intuitive thought? Or do you just exclusively follow the client and let them go where they're going to go? So self-restraint is always necessary, right? And but sometimes it is appropriate to ask permission and let your client know you have an intuitive thought, you know? So it'd be interesting to see how she manages that in her practice.
Yeah, and that is such an interesting, you know, I'm such a cue ball, break up the balls kind of guy, you know what I mean?
And yeah, that's a good description of you.
And thank you.
That's really good. I like that one.
I am not the person that says, hey, you know, somewhat, I don't want to say sheepishly, but relative to myself, hey, you know, I had a thought, you know, do you mind if I share with you the epiphany that I'm experiencing right now that may be relevant to your situation? I mean,
that's so funny.
Don't want to disrupt your flow. I don't want to disrupt your flow or anything, but I'm really experiencing a moment cognitively right now that I'd like to share if you thought you had enough. Yeah, no, I'm just kind of free associating at this point. But anyway, yeah.
You're going to come right out with it, right?
Well, no, I will ask. I've taken a page out of your playbook, Oh Wise One, and I'm, you know, I have a little bit of Cindy in me. I've got my, you know, my California delivery. What would you like to talk about today? What do you think your options are?
What's your biggest win in this session
today? What's your biggest win? Mm-hmm. What's a takeaway?
What could be the biggest, and, best use of our time today? Yes.
I was asking your time today. Exactly. Yes. And we're not making fun. It was like we're making fun of ourselves. These are all legitimate questions to ask during the course of a coaching session, folks.
Yes.
So we're poking fun at ourselves and not at coaching.
Right. And the magic happens when it does become intuitive. You know, it is a skill set. And so when to ask the right questions, you know, without trying to lead your client. I guess that's the, you know, because I do know that if you are intuitive and also a quick processor, which I am both, sometimes you use self-restraint because you may be feeling a powerful thought. And but But especially if you are just getting to know a client, you know what I mean? The early sessions, you may want to hold back because they may not go where you think they should. They may go somewhere entirely different and it's exactly where they need to go. So I think, you know, once you get to know somebody and you're in sync with somebody, I think that that intuition plays even stronger as you move along with a client. At least that's been my experience.
Yes, yes, we start to track our clients and really get in sync with where they're at and where they want to go, and that's we've done that through assessment and through some in-depth interviewing and such, and so we can move things forward. So I agree with that. So it it is marvelous. So I was going to share with you, I haven't shared with you yet, but I'm going to be going to Miami in 2 weeks and going to be trying to forge some coaching stuff out there on the East Coast. So
nice. You know, I was just in Florida.
Be on standby because you might be getting some work there, Cindy. You might be getting some East Coast action here.
Fabulous.
And the reason why I say that, listeners, is because I know where, you know, I'm good for certain people and maybe not so good for others. And so that's where Cindy comes in because she's just about good for everybody. And old Bruce, no, I'm not. Anyway, but seriously, yeah, so definitely.
Hello, this is Mary.
We'll chat about that. Oh, there she is. There's our guest.
Hi, Mary. Oh. Hey, we're here. We're here. Yeah. How are you, Mary? Yes. Thank
I'm
you.
Doing so well.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And I want to introduce you to Bruce online, Bruce Cameron. And we're so pleased to have you on. And we both will be asking questions and our listeners will be listening in. And I'm very excited to have you on because I think intuition is such a big part of the coaching process for a lot of people, not everybody. But this is a field you specialize in. And so I'm really anxious not only to learn about it myself, but to have, you know, our listeners get some information. So maybe you could start with just a little bit about your experience and background and maybe what led you to coaching and how you might incorporate that into your already existing practice.
Sure. Well, thank you so much. And Bruce, it's very nice to meet you. Thank you for having me on your show today. My name is Mary Street, and originally I had a near-death experience in 2005, and I actually call it a spiritual crisis. So I did not come to this work with open arms, to be honest with you, and I felt very challenged when I first started. I was very sensitive as a child and always had a sense of people and their thought processes and just having knowledge about where they were in their situations. I could pick up very easily emotions from other people. I was kind of like the Joan Rivers of psychics when I was little. So I just kind of would put it out there, much to the chagrin of my parents. But yeah, so there was kind of no filter. Although, you know, it was nice about my parents is they never said, hey, you're some kind of a weirdo, stop it. You know, they
nice. Very good.
Yeah, they didn't discourage me, but they didn't encourage me. So
what were some of the things that happened? I don't know if you remember examples when you were a child that might, you know, point to that you had this gift.
So I would go to work with my dad quite frequently, and he was a washing machine, a repairman. And as we walked into houses, I could sense the energy of tension. I could also sense the energy of communication. So I remember clearly going to this home where these women were having my dad fix the washing machine and dryer, and I could clearly feel that they were stressed about money, and I could hear them talking about, I don't know how we're going to pay these bills. And I got into the truck. I just, you know, had absorbed all this energy. I got into the truck and I burst into tears. And I said, Dad, they're broke. They're so poor. How are they going to do this? My dad's just looking at me. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Talk to your mother when you get home.
Now, how old were you?
I was probably around 10 years old.
Wow.
Around 10. Yeah, so I was always kind of able to pick things up and to sense things. I didn't know what it was. That came much later for me after I started to develop my ability. So that's kind of how my childhood went for the most part. It really wasn't until after I had the spiritual crisis, the awakening, that I really kind of said to God, if you allow me to live, then I will do whatever it is to serve. And absolutely the way that he chose for me. And on top of that, you know, as well, there was another portion of that where I was able to actually donate a kidney so that my son could receive a kidney. So there were a lot of plans in place that I was not aware of at that time.
Wow. Wonderful. You know, you said something that interests me. You said, I think you said you could hear their conversation. Was that that you could actually hear it, or you sensed it?
I could hear it in my head.
Okay,
so oftentimes with clients, I'll hear and see and feel what they know, and or kind of like discussions they're having in their head. I've really worked on my own psychic development, and part of what I'm able to do is actually is able to hear conversations, and also I'm considered what is known to be as a retrocognizant. So I'm able to go back onto their timeline to see what transpired in their formidable years, their childhood years, that are leading to the crisis or the issue that they're currently having.
Well,
so what
will
happen
helpful.
Is I'm taken to, yeah, you know, it really is, because it pinpoints
very helpful.
Really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that's an intuitive where you can go back and see, do you see it or hear it?
I hear mostly. That's my first ability, is clairaudience and then clairvoyance. I taught myself to be clairvoyant, where I actually see a picture or an image or a symbol to back up what I'm hearing.
Okay. Thank you for defining that, because a lot of times I sort of know the language, but a lot of times people listening may not understand what is a clairvoyant. I mean, because there are different ways to be, I guess, psychic or intuitive, and people have, you know, more powerful senses in one area than the other, although they may use both.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And
cool.
It really just depends on your own natural abilities. And I actually help students and business people develop their intuition, not to maybe do what I do, but to use it in everyday life.
Yes, because everybody is intuitive to some degree. I believe that anyway.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you actually teach people how to kind of dial into it a little bit.
Yes, I actually work with some stockbrokers. I think the market is changing, and I think that because the market is in a highly emotional field, that to rely on our intuition and to have a modality to work within absolutely helps. My feeling, though, about what I do as an intuitive coach is that I don't believe in fortune telling, and I tell my clients that. I believe that our own future is created by choices, and that when I'm actually working with a client, the beautiful thing about coaching, as you all know, is that we can push our clients into their own power. And maybe
right.
What I do is I offer them options and solutions, but at no point am I in control of their future. They always are. And I think that's the thing that I, you know, really try to relay with my clients, and for those that are coming to me. I, again, for me, fortune telling does not work. I think that there's three parts of what I do, which is, you know, I can take a look intuitively at it, but I also think the client needs to take an intuitive look at their own stuff that's going around in the situation, and then do their own due diligence, which is fact finding. And I think when we use that combination, yeah, it really allows you to have clarity, because a lot of times people are making decisions based on emotional. And I think that when we're emotional about a situation, we are not far away enough from the situation to have clarity. And so that's primarily how I work with clients.
So having a coach doing what you're doing for them can be helpful when it's, you know, when they're in decision-making mode in an emotional state.
Absolutely. And, you
right.
know, I'd like to look at coaching as an intuitive coaching, especially as mind mapping. So I can use tools like the Tarot. The Tarot actually has no mystic ability to it. What it actually does, it allows me to subconsciously tap into the energy of the card itself, or I would say maybe universal or conscious or subconscious energy, to gift forward information But I would say that the intuition part, I think you should rely on the other two parts equally, and not take for verbatim or face value absolutely what I say. And I know that this field is highly unregulated. And so part of my mission is to really help people understand what it could be, you know, what a reading could be in the terms of therapeutic.
Right. And when would you mind, Mary, just define for us fortune telling? Because this is really interesting what you're saying, and it really lines up with coaching very well, I think. Go ahead, mm-hmm. Bruce.
I got to inject this story. I worked for the Federal Bureau of Prisons for, about a quarter of a century. And one of my duties, I worked 6 years in a women's penitentiary. It had Squeaky Fromm and a whole host of other famous, you know, females that were doing federal prison sentences. And one night I was the on-call psychologist, and a busload came in of newly arriving female inmates. The admission officer called me down here because we have to do a psychology screening right when they get there to rule out suicidal and homicidal ideation and
temperament
and those things. Officer calls and says, "Bruce, you got to get down here, man. You got to get down here and you got to do this interview real quick." I'm like, okay. So I get down there. There's a woman in the holding cell, and I look at her information, and it says that she was a psychic. And so then my first question was, you know, "Hello, I'm Mr. Cameron. I'm with the psychology department. I just have one quick question before we proceed with our quick screening tonight. Did you know you were coming to jail tonight?" I mean, she's like,
"Oh, yeah,
you son of a bitch."
Yeah.
And man, that was one of the big knee slappers of my career. Now that said, what is the differential between the fortune telling and what you're really talking about? I like what you're saying here.
Yeah,
about
I do too.
Sure, you're blending almost empirical measures along with intuitive things, and it sounds like you use a measure that almost measures a person's intuitiveness, if you will. So I'm really, please talk to us about that contrast, because knuckle draggers like myself here in Texas, right, are going to be like, "What do you mean?" You know, and kind of drift, drift into that fortune telling camp. And that's not what you're talking about at all. So yeah, please continue with that differential.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you do, Mary.
I would say for me, and this is just my personal viewpoint, I would say that there are different types of readers. And so my style is more therapeutic. I think there are other styles where they will tell you that this is going to happen. And when they say this is going to happen, that means that that leads the reedy or the seeker to believe that whatever they're telling them is set in stone.
Yes, and they're supposed to do it.
Okay, mm-hmm. Right. And yeah, that if they don't do it,
right,
and this is the part that where it gets sticky, because my belief is they have high psychic ability. What maybe the portion is missing is the integrity piece. So if you have, so part of what might occur in a reading, and I've talked to several of my clients because I like to get informed and not make a judgment call, but this is honestly what I'm receiving from my own clientele.
Right.
What they'll do is they will say, you have some sort of curse on you, or you have a dark cloud on you. And for $400, I'm going to light a candle. You won't see the candle, or you need to drop $5,000 around a jar and bring that to me.
Right,
or I'm going to do this and the other thing. And so, I've seen strings attached to the wrists. I've seen, if you don't take care of, so they'll say, "Come back, I'll give you another reading. Now I see that your mother has a curse on her. So for $5,000, I'll remove the
That's
curse
crazy.
On, off of her, because you don't want," and here's a little bit of NLP, right? They're very good at NLP too, by the way, neuro-linguistic programming. "You don't want your mother to be cursed, do you?" So, you know, it works on a level of, unfortunately, vulnerability. It works on the level of a sense of putting high levels of stress on people that sends them into a space that they are no longer feeling empowered. And I have been victim of that myself. So I totally understand how this could happen. I'm very conscious of delivery because I think anyone can coach. And I think anyone could be a psychic or an intuitive. However, it is the art of delivery that sets us apart, as well as the combination of our ethical value.
Right,
and where
absolutely.
We are in placement of encouraging or discouraging our clientele, or empowering or disempowering them. So that's primarily what I have seen kind of across the board. And again, not to discredit their ability, I think that they have high levels of ability, but it starts to become a real gray area, at least for me, when all of a sudden things are attached. Now, I have seen attachments to people. That's part of the work that I do. However, in that, there's some psychological testing that needs to be done. The church is very, the Catholic Church has been doing exorcism for quite many years, and it is something that is prolific within the Catholic Church, but they also have processes in place to discern what is truly perhaps an attachment or psychological event. So in that sense of it, you know, there's got to be some sort of protocol within that, I believe, that keeps your client safe. And so for me, with again, going back to the fortune-telling thing, I think above all, the measure is, and I really look at anything that I'm doing, is this empowering my client or is this disempowering them? And from that point, that's where I move forward, or I decline.
Right. So it's all about the client doing what's right for the client.
Absolutely.
Which means you stand in integrity. And I clearly understand that, you know, I really hear what you're saying, that somebody may have ability, but it's how they use that.
Yes, and it's also about, you know, the monetary exchange. So there are some clients that should not be going to a psychic. They should either be going to the police, or they should be going to see a psychologist, or they need to see some sort of therapy that I cannot provide. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a licensed psychotherapist. So that is out of my realm. And to take money from somebody because you think you know that, A, it's illegal. B, you don't know it. And C, I think that starts to become a placement of ego. So for the highest and best good of clients, I do screen clients when they come in. If I'm suspect that they have PTS, or they have had some psychological issues in the past, I will decline that, because my honest feeling is I cannot help them. If I'm in a space and a place where I can help you, maybe create some goals or define your goals or something like that, that I'm actually able to do, then I can help you. But, you know, I don't take every client, to be honest with you. And I don't take every client if they have had readings upon readings upon readings, because very honestly, that is an indication to me that they're looking for something that I cannot provide. I'm a very honest and forthright reader, and I don't tell clients what they want to hear. Or, you know, it's more like what they need to know, and then they have the opportunity to do something with it or not.
So somebody who goes to readers and readers and readers, different ones all the time, is that what you mean?
Yes, and for the same issue. So if I might, you know, I have an intake that I do with clientele, and the first question is, first of all, because I work with a lot of new readers, you know, some of the people that have never had a reading. Have you ever had a reading? How many times have you had a reading? When was the last time you had a reading? And so if they tell me they've seen a reader, five different readers in the last week, then that's a big, big red flag to me, and I will not help them.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So what would make somebody want to see five readers in a week?
It's like they're doctor shopping, right? They're wanting their own prophecy to come true. They have control in their own prophecy, and they're actually ignoring other aspects about themselves by doing that.
Right. And yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, oftentimes they're in a space of need, very deep seated need. And I see this a lot, that it's a deep seated need to be loved and to be seen. And so and wanting this thing so badly. And, you know, I have to be very cautious around that, because you have to be able to read as well how the information will be received. Some people can receive information and they are not going to take it personally. Other times people are very much on the edge, especially if they've seen a lot of readers, and, you know, it becomes a very sticky kind of matter. That's why in my own personal practice, I just don't do it. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's because I've been doing this so long.
Right.
I think readers, when they first start, they're so willing to help. You know, most of us in this are in service, and we're in service to the divine as well as helping, you know, humanity. So our greatest need is to serve, because that is just probably our blueprint. But there are those that we cannot help, and nor should we help, you know. So
right, I agree with that.
Again,
yeah,
I think the client comes first. If you cannot provide that service, I do keep a list of providers on hand that I refer out to.
Yeah, and that's the same with coaching. You know, what is coaching and what isn't it? And we're not licensed therapists, and we can't practice therapy. And if there's an indication that there's a need, you know, we should be referring out. So it would be along those lines, what I hear you say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
and
good.
I think everybody has to know themselves. You know, everyone has to know what their capabilities are. And that's just, honestly, that's a piece for myself. And I can't make that piece for another reader. I can't make that piece for someone else who's coming into coaching. I think you know intrinsically what works for you and what does not.
Right. And it does come with experience, right? That, you know, that red flag feeling, you know, you intuitively know this is deeper than you can go, or you're qualified to go. So, yeah, I think it's really important to have that register inside, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that comes from experience, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been doing this for 11 years professionally now. And by professional, I mean, you know, going to school, studying, you know, practicing before I actually work with clients to make sure the measure of what I'm doing works, working through the processes myself, actually currently reading, and also in the process of working through different lines or measures of that. And so, yes, it does actually come from, I believe, from experience and I think dedication to the craft.
Mm. Now, as far as the coaching skills, I guess my question, Bruce may have some questions too, because some of what you're saying kind of just sounds like coaching in a way, and what you're doing is intuitive coaching, but what are some of the things that you've taken away from your training as a coach that really you've been able to implement well into what you do?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as many of us and that went through the coaching had already been doing a method of coaching. So the coaching that I received was very good for me because it gave me a strategy. And I think things work well with systems and strategies. That's just my firm belief, and that's how I teach. So the coaching strategies, the SMART concept, I use that quite a bit with my clients to set up a strategy for goals and to really kind of suss out generalizations. So I think the coaching, to dig deeper, I think with the coaching, we're able to kind of dig deeper and to kind of break apart general strategies and to really suss out what it is that perhaps is needed to move forward. And then also it is accountability. So I really feel like that strategy has helped me quite a bit. And also the questions, you know, I believe in the Socrates matter of asking questions. So that's more of a cognitive behavioral style of coaching. But I ask a lot of questions and I go deeper. And I think the more questions that you ask, it lends and reframing that lends itself to having the client think in different terms of strategy, analysis, decompartmentalization. It allows the client to move forward in their own processes in such a way that thought now can be looked as potentiality rather than it's just this way. Because I think with coaching, we can take apart the it's this black or white and there's no gray. I think I've got had a lot of people come in, and I think the reconfiguration or that portion of the questioning allows for their mind to open in such a way that it allows them to have possibilities. And then to push them back into their power to think, how can this new strategy work for me, rather than just being this way or being victimized by maybe my situation? How can I empower myself to move through this?
I totally agree. I love what you just said. I had a coaching session this morning, and I applied that, and it worked remarkably well. It's amazing how you present certain questions can really get a client thinking in terms of strategy and tools or planning, of how they can handle certain situations moving forward, instead of, like you said, just being driven crazy by it or be a victim.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Now, you did mention SMART, which is like specific. I'm trying to remember the whole SMART
act.
Measurable
action,
action oriented,
time based, realistic.
Yeah, the realistic part is always important too, and I think that's one that sometimes gets kind of left out. Like asking questions around the reality of this really being a goal that can serve the client and those involved in their in their decision. Vetting that out, I think, is important.
Oh, absolutely. And I think all of the whole process, when you start to take it apart with a client, you start to see maybe where they're blocked. And, so then you can apply other strategies and ask questions about, how you can shift that or help them shift that or how you can open them up to possibilities to see.
Right. Where they're blocked. And even like some people don't know they're blocked, don't even hear what they're saying. And so that the process of feeding it back to the client, they're mirroring back what they said, I think can be really powerful, because sometimes people talk, but they don't really hear what they're saying. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And they know the reason, they know they're blocked. I mean, I think people know in their energy that, they're not able to make manifest, they're not able to move forward in their energy, but they can't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the process of taking that whole SMART apart and kind of putting it out there and writing it down and having it become realistic, because maybe they've taken something and become overwhelmed by the process. So if we can chunk it down into smaller pieces and just
right.
reassure them that it doesn't have to be done tomorrow, that they just need to take a step.
Exactly.
Then
work
honestly,
towards
sometimes,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. It just takes the pressure off of them. And so they're able to release that to move forward.
Yeah, there's so many tools. And people do get overwhelmed when they have to do, new projects or, it's just new territory. If you break it up. And I think that's what makes coaching so beautiful, is that you're typically being coached every week and, over a period of time. And so it's like, what can you, accomplish this week? What can you commit to? And it's usually bite-sized kind of tasks that they can do that in the end will get them where they want to go, but they don't have to do it all today. Which is what a lot of people get overwhelmed, because they think, oh my God, how am I going to do all this? It's like you write a book one word at a time. And I think coaching does break up the process for people to where it's more feasible. It just seems more doable for them, and they make progress
right.
because of it, where maybe they would have stalled out or given up. Or driven themselves crazy trying to get it all done too quick, and everybody around them crazy. You know what I mean? So,
right, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any, I'm just thinking like, example, I know you can't, sometimes we talk about client cases, we don't give names, but just somewhere, mm-hmm. Where you have combined the coaching with your intuitive, ability, and how that sort of melts together in terms of really helping a client move forward, because you're doing is different than a lot of intuitives, quite frankly.
And let me add to that, what specific coaching techniques might you use to help somebody tap into their intuitive?
That's interesting too. So there's two fold questions.
Okay, so primarily my forte is readings. So I like to call myself a transformational reader who uses a combination of therapeutic tarot, coaching, and psychic discovery or intuitive discovery. So the processes that I might use if somebody comes in, for example, we'll just take relationships because that's primarily, relationships and career are primarily what I specialize in. And I think your specialty starts to come to you, to be honest with you. I don't think you can say, I'm going to just do this, but I think your clientele starts to come to you, and then you work backward to creating a specialty business for yourself. If those are new to the coaching business and want to know, that's how it works primarily for me.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. Yeah.
Right. So
I agree.
Primarily someone would come in and they would like to know about the relationship. And usually the questions are, will I or should I? And right there to me, I that is mostly a fortune-telling question. So will I end up with a tall, dark-haired man? We've all heard that, right? Or should I do this? Will I and should I questions are taking someone out of empowerment. So first what I would do is I would reframe the question. What would be the outcome? Outcome, not set in stone, not this is the only thing you should do. And I always tell people, take 24, 48 hours to think about the information. You absolutely do not have to do anything with it, but this will be a coaching session as well as an intuitive session, okay? And I've also talked to them about fortune telling. I really, I can't tell you enough that I have to really say that. So someone would come in about the relationship, and then they would probably come in with a question about, is this relationship going to move forward? So then the question would reframe to, what would you need to do in order for this relationship to move forward? What do you need to do on your side? Because it's not always based on what the other person will do, okay? So oftentimes it is a measure of, what actions do you need to take? So for instance, if you're not paying attention to your spouse and so you're angry that your spouse has to go to work or, you know, do all this other thing, then what primarily is something that you need to focus on? And so how can we reframe that into steps that you can take? There have been people that have come in that have really honestly given up on their marriage. And I think a part of being an intuitive coach is to say, look, have you gone to therapy? First of all, let's talk about, you know, what have you actually done? Are you in some kind of counseling, coaching? What are you doing for yourself? Second of all, have you talked to a licensed therapist, a marriage counselor, your church, your pastor? Have you gone to synagogue? So those types of things actually, in my belief set, need to maybe be looked at because I think, again, it's a spectrum of things. And I'm just a piece of the portion. That's primarily it. That's it. So after we have dialogue and perhaps there's some admittance because I've maybe picked up that this person's not really excited about being married because they prefer to work and they're angry and they're passive aggressive about that whole scenario. Perhaps the person really just needs to find some joy in their life, right? So maybe they need to take up a hobby or go back to work or do something maybe different that stimulates their energy in a different way. And takes the pressure off of their mate to bring them joy, okay? So if that were the situation, then I would say, you know what? First of all, let's just take a look at this and tell me a little bit about, you know, what you were doing to, to work toward betterment. You know, what's your goal for that? Do you have a goal and a design? Do you have a life plan for yourself aside from perhaps, you know, your relationship? What are you doing for yourself? And so from that point, they may or may not, or they may and they're not working the goal, right? So we know as coaches that we can say, okay, here's maybe what you got to look at, and next week I'll see you. But if they've not really taken any action steps to move there, then there's block happening and occurring. So then there's a little bit maybe of restructuring or looking at the situation again. But that's primarily how I oftentimes work. Because I'm psychic, what happens for me, which is different maybe, and I do believe that coaching works best for me because it is an intuitive process. And they say this across the board in the coaching field, that I've even looked at other methods, and they usually refer back to intuition. But for me, I am going between the alpha and the beta state. So I go into a slight trance to receive information, and then I go back into beta to the talking state. So I am easily able to go back and forth. And as I mentioned before, I'm a retrocognizant, yes, and so I'm retrocognizant. So oftentimes I'll be taken back to a timeline of maybe an age where something occurred that is possibly affecting what's going on now. And so from that point, you know, I can take a look at that, but if the person honestly needs some therapeutic work around that, then my suggestion would be to see a therapist to do the more deeper work that's needed, or to set up, if coachable, then to set up a program where we can strategically mind map some goals for you to have you stay on track. And I think, you know, what's great about coaching is that it's not, and I think this is where I think some people kind of think coaching is a deficit. It's, you know, it's like they're just trying to make money from each coming back. And it's not. What it is no. It's keeping you task oriented so you can go move to completion. Because I think where people fall off is they don't follow up. You know, there's action, there's plans, but there's no movement. So exactly. I think that that kind of combination, just that works well. That's just the process that I use.
Yeah. And really sometimes, you know, even the question, you know, what would it mean to you? What would the value be of actually being able to achieve this and working with a coach, you're more likely to get there, you know, so or get there quicker too. Sometimes, you know, the time is money thing, you know, you can do something alone, but it may take you a year, where if you work with a coach, it may take you 3 months. You know what I mean? So the coach is really there to support the client. And I like that you said that. It's not coming back. And also, interestingly enough, and I look at it this way because I'm a clinical nutritionist as well as a life coach doing business startup and nutrition. But, you know, you can't give everybody all the answers and all the help and everything they need in an hour or two. It's just not realistic. And so I think that is the coaching model, which is generally 3 months, maybe longer for some, 3 to 6. It takes time to implement what you want to do. You know, you could spend one day thinking about it or an hour thinking about it and talking about it, but it's the actual doing that actually takes longer. So I think that's why people need to understand why coaches actually work with a client longer, because it serves the client.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think the intuitive process, you know, for me, because I'm just able to pick up information readily, you know, especially around relationship stuff. We are in a day and age of where we can spy on people now. I see that quite a bit. And I'm a very forthright reader. And, you know, sometimes it will be very apparent. I'll say, well, you've gone through his cell phone, or, you know, I see that you're looking in Facebook or gone through the cell phone, and I get the look because I know it.
Busted.
And I said, first of all, that's illegal. But second of all, then why are we, I call it the crazy cat lady. Like, why are we doing the crazy cat lady stuff now? So then, you know, we've got to talk about that a little bit. But it is, you know, I think because of the intuition, it absolutely helps me suss things out, for me at least, faster, and to kind of get to point value very, very quickly.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. That's amazing. It was just like combining the two skills, and overtly, meaning putting it out there. So you typically, if you see it, do you always directly put it out there to the client verbally, or do you sometimes hold back and use it as a sort of a guide for you to ask certain questions, which may help the client?
It really depends, and this is where the art of delivery comes in. And I strongly feel that, and I've seen this a lot with myself and also with new readers, that it is the skill of art of delivery. Some people are not able to handle the information in such a way where it might cause them, you know, maybe to be fractured and to maybe feel a very emotional. So I think it's also a sense of what is the best delivery style for this client? Are they able to maybe take a point blank statement? I interject a lot of humor. I think one thing that I am capable of is creating rapport rather quickly. And I think the rapport piece is very important in all of the work that we do. I feel that once you've gained rapport, you know, the trust factor is there. And so they trust
right.
that what you're doing is to help them, not to hinder them.
Yes.
But, you know, oftentimes it just depends. Like if I'm in with a client and they have a very good sense of humor, I'll put it in sense in a sense of humor style, and they're more able to receive it that way. Sometimes, again, people just are in a highly emotional state. And they've been to maybe, you know, a reading a year ago, and that fortune-telling prediction has not come true. And now they're on the edge because the person didn't show up. It didn't go the way that the psychic predicted. And now their world's kind of falling apart because they've actually lived that whole year hoping that this thing will come true. Because
so then they're disappointed. Yeah, the disappointment factor.
Very disappointed, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a huge responsibility piece that comes with anything that we do.
What about if somebody has been told to take a certain action by a intuitive and then the client takes a different turn and they're second guessing and in fear that they did the wrong thing, that this person told them to do the opposite thing. Do you ever get that?
I get it a lot. Yeah, unfortunately I do. She told me that if I didn't take care of this, I'd have a generational curse on my family. I don't want that. She told me that I'm going to die, which I've heard. It's really, honestly, that just is heartbreaking for me to hear that.
Pretty severe.
And that's happened to me, Cindy. So I would say that that has really affected me. I, against my own intuition, right? And this is how we learn. And I tell people, really tap into that. I had been doing a 3-day event up in Los Angeles. I was very, very tired. I had a wing woman helping me at the event. She was a good friend. And she said, hey, go over and talk to these two girls. I'll give you a reading, you know. And I was like, I don't know. I'm tired. Maybe I shouldn't go. I went. And, of course, they told me my husband was going to die, right?
Oh, wow.
So... yeah, so I was just, and they would keep it up. They kept it up. And I was just like, okay, this is really not what I want to hear. I drove back from Los Angeles crying the whole way. And I know why God did that to me. So he would teach me a piece of integrity, right? So I get back home. My husband's fine. But a week later, he gets really sick and we can't figure out what's wrong. So what do I have to do? Right? So I'm thinking, crap, I guess these people are right. And so I can see, honestly, how people would take what we say, not with a grain of salt, but really like this is coming true. Fortunately, my husband, you know, didn't pass away, but it really taught me some lessons in that integrity piece. And so it is not within our constitution or our right or our power to say that this is going to happen. I don't know. I mean, 100%. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not 100% sure that this is going to go this way or not. And I tell clients, and there is no way that you can be 100% on anything. We even can, through coaching, give people tools that may not be optimum for them, but then you course correct, right? So, you know, in the course of this, though, I think that the ultimate, again, the consideration is your client and how you would gift information to someone in such a way that they understand what you're saying and on a higher level be pushed back into their own power so they can make their own decisions with clarity.
Yeah, that sounds perfect to me, actually, the way you do it, because I think a lot of people, especially if they've come to trust somebody that, you know, they're more apt to believe what they say and the direction they give them. And if they go in an opposite direction, they may be second guessing their own intuitive intellectual ability to make a sound decision.
Right. And part of what, you know, Bruce had asked about how to get them to trust their intuition. I would say the hardest thing about intuition is trust, the trust factor. And I've seen this across the board, not only with clients, but with students that I teach. That I can't teach you. I can't teach you to trust. If you come in with a high degree of abandonment issues or trust issues already, that's going to be at the forefront. And the very honestly, the only way that you can work through that is through experimental use. So that means you will have to sit there and read for a while to understand your own processes, because it is a process. Once you understand your own logistics, your own personal process, how it all works for you, and you create a strategic plan or you have some strategies in place, then you start working through the process I always tell people to keep a journal or a log of what they're doing so they can look back to see. And I think that's also important for coaches.
Yeah, that can be powerful.
Because you can look back and you can see tangible evidence. What I'm doing is not tangible. And this is, I think, part of where people have a very difficult time trusting it. It's not as if it's something that's black and white. It's something that you have to understand your own energy and how it comes to you. And if more often than not, that trust lends itself to becoming more evident, then I think then you understand that process.
All right. Well, we got to
This has been fabulous, Mary. We're at the end of the show, but thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you both very, very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
How can people find you?
Yeah. Do you have a website?
How can people find you?
Mm-hmm. My name again is Mary. It's Merry Street, and they can find me at marystreet.com.
Fabulous.
And I also do phone readings, Skype, and in-person readings if you live in San Diego.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much for coming on today, Mary. It was really informative. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Very nice to meet you. Many blessings to both of you.
Thank you.
Folks. All right. Thank you. And folks, don't forget to see us on Facebook, on our Facebook page, Concierge Coaches Show. Also, I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Cindy, where can you be reached?
I can be reached at 714-943-6206 or our website, wisdomfoods, all one word with an S, .com. Thanks so much for listening.
See y'all next week here on LA Talk Radio, on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Have a good week.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.